Chapter 9 Continued. The school talked of nothing but Sirius Black for the next few days. The theories about how he had entered the castle became wilder and wilder. Hannah Abbott from Hufflepuff spent much of their next herbology class telling anyone who'd listen that Black could turn into a flowering shrub. The fat lady's ripped canvas had been taken off the wall and replaced with the portrait of Sir Cadogan and his fat grey pony. Nobody was very happy about this. Sir Cadogan spent half his time challenging people to duels, and the rest thinking up ridiculously complicated passwords, which he changed at least twice a day.
"He's barking mad," said Seamus Finnegan angrily to Percy. "Can't we get anyone else?"
"None of the other pictures wanted the job," said Percy. "Frightened of what happened to the fat lady. Sir Cadogan was the only one brave enough to volunteer." Sir Cadogan, however, was the least of Harry's worries. He was now being closely watched. Teachers found excuses to walk along corridors with him, and Percy Weasley, acting, Harry suspected, on his mother's orders, was tailing him everywhere like an extremely pompous guard dog. To cap it all, Professor McGonagall summoned Harry into her office with such a sombre expression on her face, Harry thought someone must have died. "There's no point hiding it from you any longer, Potter," she said, in a very serious voice. "I know this will come as a shock to you, but Sirius Black—" "I know he's after me," said Harry wearily. "I heard Ron's dad telling his mum. Mr. Weasley works for the Ministry of Magic." Professor McGonagall seemed very taken aback. She stared at Harry for a moment or two, then said,
"I see. Well, in that case, Potter, you'll understand why I don't think it's a good idea for you to be practising Quidditch in the evenings. Out on the pitch with only your team members, it's very exposed, Potter." "We've got our first match on Saturday," said Harry, outraged. "I've got to train, Professor."
Professor McGonagall considered him intently. Harry knew she was deeply interested in the Gryffindor team's prospects. It had been she, after all, who'd suggested him as seeker in the first place. He waited, holding his breath. Professor McGonagall stood up and stared out of the window at the Quidditch pitch, just visible through the rain.
"Well, goodness knows I'd like to see us win the cup at last. But all the same, Potter, I'd be happier if a teacher were present. I'll ask Madame Hooch to oversee your training sessions."
The weather worsened steadily as the first Quidditch match drew nearer. Undaunted, the Gryffindor team were training harder than ever under the eye of Madame Hooch. Then, at their final training session before Saturday's match, Oliver Wood gave his team some unwelcome news.
"We're not playing Slytherin," he told them, looking very angry. "Flint's just been to see me. We're playing Hufflepuff instead."
"Why?"
chorused the rest of the team.
"Flint's excuse is that their seeker's arm's still injured," said Wood, grinding his teeth furiously. "But it's obvious why they're doing it. Don't want to play in this weather. Think it'll damage their chances."
There had been strong winds and heavy rain all day, and as Wood spoke, they heard a distant rumble of thunder.
"There's nothing wrong with Malfoy's arm," said Harry furiously. "He's faking it."
"I know that, but we can't prove it," said Wood bitterly. "And we've been practising all those moves, assuming we're playing Slytherin, and instead it's Hufflepuff, and their style's quite different. They've got a new captain and seeker, Cedric Diggory."
Angelina, Alicia, and Katie suddenly giggled.
"What?"
said Wood, frowning at this light-hearted behaviour.
"He's that tall, good-looking one, isn't he?" said Angelina.
"Strong and silent," said Katie, and they started to giggle again.
"He's only silent because he's too thick to string two words together," said Fred impatiently.
"I don't know why you're worried, Oliver. Hufflepuff are a pushover. Last time we played them, Harry caught the snitch in about 5 minutes, remember?"
"We were playing in completely different conditions," Wood shouted, his eyes bulging slightly. "Diggory's put a very strong side together. He's an excellent seeker. I was afraid you'd take it like this. We mustn't relax. We must keep our focus. Slytherin are trying to wrong-foot us. We must win."
"Oliver, calm down," said Fred, looking slightly alarmed. "We're taking Hufflepuff very seriously. Seriously." The day before the match, the winds reached howling point, and the rain fell harder than ever. It was so dark inside the corridors and classrooms that extra torches and lanterns were lit. The Slytherin team were looking very smug indeed, and none more so than Malfoy.
"Ah, if only my arm were feeling a bit better," he sighed, as the gale outside pounded the windows.
Harry had no room in his head to worry about anything except the match next day. Oliver Wood kept hurrying up to him between classes and giving him tips. The third time this happened, Wood talked for so long that Harry suddenly realized he was 10 minutes late for Defense Against the Dark Arts, and set off at a run with Wood shouting after him,
"Diggory's got a very fast swerve, Harry, so you might want to try looping him."
Harry skidded to a halt outside the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom, pulled the door open, and dashed inside.
"Sorry I'm late, Professor Lupin.
But it wasn't Professor Lupin who looked up at him from the teacher's desk. It was Snape.
"This lesson began 10 minutes ago, Potter, so I think we'll make it 10 points from Gryffindor. Sit down."
But Harry didn't move.
"Where's Professor Lupin?" he said.
"He says he's feeling too ill to teach today," said Snape with a twisted smile. "I believe I told you to sit down." But Harry stayed where he was.
"What's wrong with him?"
Snape's black eyes glittered.
"Nothing life-threatening," he said, looking as though he wished it was. 5 more points from Gryffindor, and if I have to ask you to sit down again, it will be 50.
Harry walked slowly to his seat and sat down. Snape looked around at the class.
"As I was saying before Potter interrupted, Professor Lupin has not left any record of the topics you have covered so far."
"Please, sir, we've done Boggarts, Redcaps, Cappers, and Grindylows," said Hermione quickly, "and we're just about to start—"
"Be quiet," said Snape coldly. "I did not ask for information. I was merely commenting on Professor Lupin's lack of organization." "He's the best defense against the dark arts teacher we've ever had," said Dean Thomas boldly, and there was a murmur of agreement from the rest of the class. Snape looked more menacing than ever.
"You are easily satisfied? Lupin is hardly overtaxing you. I would expect first years to be able to deal with Redcaps and Grindylows. Today we shall discuss—"
Harry watched him flick through the textbook to the very back chapter, which he must know they hadn't covered.
"Werewolves," said Snape.
"But, sir," said Hermione, seemingly unable to restrain herself, "we're not supposed to do werewolves yet. We're due to start Hinkypunks."
"Miss Granger," said Snape, in a voice of deadly calm, "I was under the impression that I was taking this lesson, not you, and I am telling you all to turn to page 394. He glanced around again. "All of you! Now!" With many bitter, sidelong looks and some sullen muttering, the class opened their books. "Which of you can tell me how we distinguish between the werewolf and the true wolf?" said Snape. Everyone sat in motionless silence. Everyone except Hermione, whose hand, as it so often did, had shot straight into the air.
"Anyone?" Snape said, ignoring Hermione. His twisted smile was back.
"Are you telling me that Professor Lupin hasn't even taught you the basic distinction between—"
"We told you," said Parvati suddenly. "We haven't got as far as werewolves yet. We're still on—"
"Silence!" snarled Snape. "Well, well, well. I never thought I'd meet a third-year class who wouldn't even recognize a werewolf when they saw one. I shall make a point of informing Professor Dumbledore how very behind you all are."
"Please, sir," said Hermione, whose hand was still in the air, "the werewolf differs from the true wolf in several small ways. The snout of the werewolf—"
"That is the second time you have spoken out of turn, Miss Granger," said Snape coolly. 5 more points from Gryffindor for being an insufferable know-it-all."
Hermione went very red, put down her hand, and stared at the floor with her eyes full of tears. It was a mark of how much the class loathed Snape that they were all glaring at him, because every one of them had called Hermione a know-it-all at least once, and Ron, who told Hermione she was a know-it-all at least twice a week, said loudly, "You asked us a question, and she knows the answer. Why ask if you don't want to be told?"